Good evening. In the news tonight, Hurricane Matthew has pounded the southwestern coast of Haiti and parts of Cuba. It's headed towards the east coast here in the U.S.
If there is an evacuation order in your community, you need to take it seriously.
The next U.N. Secretary General has been chosen, and vice presidential candidates Mike Pence and Tim Kaine face off in Virginia. Joined in a virtual debate by Green Party's VP candidate Ajamu Baraka.
What we are seeing from both candidates, both of both parties, is a commitment to go to war.
With these and other stories in New York, I'm Linda Perry, and this is some of the news for Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. Hurricane Matthew pounded the southwestern coast of Haiti. Rescue workers are struggling to reach towns where people were cut off. And the full extent of the death and destruction of the storm on the island nation isn't yet known. A UN official says Hurricane Matthew caused the biggest humanitarian crisis in Haiti since the devastating earthquake of 2010. Deputy Special Representative for Haiti, Mourad Wahba, said that many people were forced from their homes and communication systems were knocked out in the country's hard-hit southwestern peninsula. UN officials estimate that more than 10,000 Haitians are in emergency shelters. Officials received reports of destroyed homes and overflowing hospitals with shortages of fresh water. The Haiti Electoral Council postponed Sunday's presidential election because of damage from Hurricane Matthew. High winds began whipping Cuba late Tuesday afternoon, just before 6 p.m. Winds were nearing 140 miles per hour. Cuban police and soldiers organized people in the storm-blasted town of Baracoa into informal recovery brigades. They began clearing streets and hauling away debris this morning. More than 300,000 people had been evacuated in provinces which include Guantanamo and Santiago de Cuba. Cuban authorities say they moved 35,000 residents of homes close to the water further inland to higher ground right before the storm. They housed them with relatives or in-state-run shelters in the city of 200,000. Cuban leader Raul Castro and his cabinet members were in eastern Cuba to personally oversee hurricane fortifications and recovery efforts. Castro told residents of Santiago that recovery plans would begin immediately. Then Hurricane Matthew pounded the southern Bahamas. Winds there were 120 miles per hour, heavy rains and storm surges. Forecasters said the storm could hit Florida or come dangerously close late Thursday or early Friday, then scrape the east coast up to the Carolinas over the weekend. Matthew could become the first major hurricane to blow ashore in the U.S. since Wilma slashed across Florida in 2005. The storm's triggering large-scale evacuations all along the eastern coast. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, deployed personnel to Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina. It's also positioning commodities and other supplies at Fort Bragg in North Carolina and in Albany, Georgia. President Obama was briefed on FEMA's preparation in Washington today.
Because it's not going to be hitting enough land, it is going to be building strength on its way to Florida. We anticipate that by tomorrow morning, it will already begin to have significant effect in Florida and then has the potential to strengthen and move on up the coast during the course of the day. So I want to make sure that everybody is paying attention to your local officials. If there is an evacuation order in your community, you need to take it seriously. We anticipate that not only is there still a chance that the core of the storm strikes Florida and some of the states further north, but even if you don't get the full force of the hurricane, we are still going to be seeing tropical force winds, the potential for storm surge, and all of that could have a devastating effect. So everybody needs to be paying attention and following the instructions of your local officials. And if you get an evacuation order, just remember that you can always rebuild, you can always repair property, you cannot restore a life if it is lost, and we want to make sure that we minimize any possible loss of life.
Governors in Florida, Georgia, South Carolina, and North Carolina declared states of emergency. Government officials, though, are worried about complacency, especially in South Florida, which hasn't seen a major hurricane, a Category 3 or higher, in 11 years. In other news, the next UN Secretary General has been chosen. He is the UN's High Commissioner for Refugees, Antonio Guterres, Portugal's former Prime Minister. Matthew Wells reports.
Mr. Guterres served as the UN High Commissioner for Refugees from 2005 until last year, and he was one of 13 candidates, 7 women and 6 men, vying to lead the organisation. Here's how Ambassador Cherkin broke the news to reporters following a Security Council meeting behind closed doors.
We'd like to express our gratitude to all of those who participated in this campaign. But today, after our 6th straw poll, we have a clear favourite, and his name is Antonio Guterres. And we have decided to go for a formal vote tomorrow morning at 10 o'clock, and we hope it can be done by acclamation. This is what we are looking at.
If the Council selects Mr. Guterres, his name will move forward to the UN General Assembly, which could decide to put his name to a vote. All of the candidates to lead the UN faced unprecedented informal briefings in the General Assembly this year in a bid by the President of the World Body to make the selection process more transparent. The new Secretary-General will start work in January. Matthew Wells, United Nations.
Ban Ki-moon will have completed his second 5-year term on December 31st. In other news, Syria's military command says it will scale back its bombardment of Aleppo to allow civilians to evacuate the contested city's eastern rebel-held neighborhoods. The UN says 275,000 people there are trapped. Meanwhile, France is launching a new push for a UN backing of a ceasefire in Syria. The France foreign minister is traveling to Russia and the U.S. on Thursday and Friday to try to persuade both sides to adopt a Security Council resolution to impose a new truce. Turning to local news, New York's immigrant community is frustrated by the U.S. Supreme Court. It refused to rehear arguments in the case challenging President Obama's executive actions on immigration reform. Andrea Sears reports.
26 states sued, saying the president had overstepped his authority by extending immigration protections to parents of children who are U.S. citizens. Antonio Alarcón with Make the Road New York says the court's 4-4 vote on the case had left children and families at risk, even in New York, where immigrants are welcome.
It is sad that our community was still in the limbo of getting the border, separating innocent families who are only the victims of this immigration system that we have.
Issued after the death of Justice Antonin Scalia, the Supreme Court's decision allowed a lower court ruling blocking the president's reforms to stand. But as a tie vote, it did not set a precedent. In asking the court to rehear the case, President Obama claimed that what is at stake is so important it needs a definitive resolution by the high court. Alarcón points out that many now facing deportation have long histories in this country.
The people who were the victims of this are people who are undocumented, who haven't been in the native countries for 20 to 30 years.
More than half of the 3.6 million people affected by the decision live in states that have not challenged the president's policy. A lawsuit filed in New York asks the federal courts to allow the Deferred Action for Parents of Americans, or DAPA, program to go into effect in states that were not part of the suit against it. Alarcón says that lawsuit had its first hearing last week.
We are in the hope that New York and the other 23 states that are putting this lawsuit against the Department of Justice will get an answer, hopefully by next year.
He adds the ultimate decision on immigration reform may depend on action in Congress to fill the vacancy on the Supreme Court. For New York News Connection, I'm Andrea Sears.
In other news, 2 former employees at the internet company Yahoo say that it built a custom software program to search all of its customers' incoming emails for the U.S. intelligence service. The revelation is called unconstitutional by congressional lawmakers. It comes as the company is in negotiations to sell its core business to Verizon for $4.8 billion. Rebecca Miles has more.
Yahoo's customer software program was secretly built last year to comply with a classified U.S. government directive. The program scanned hundreds of millions of Yahoo mail accounts, according to revelations first reported by Reuters. It's not known whether the directive, which was sent to the company's legal team, came from the National Security Agency or the FBI, according to the two former Yahoo employees. It's also not known what intelligence was seeking, although the company was asked to search for a set of characters, which could mean a phrase in an email or an attachment. The former employees said Yahoo CEO Marissa Mayer's decision angered some senior executives at the company and led to the departure of Alex Stamos, the company's chief information officer. When Stamos discovered Mayer had authorized the program, he told his subordinates that he'd been left out of the decision that hurt users' security. Due to programming flaws, he told them hackers could have accessed the stored emails. Yahoo, in a statement, told Reuters that it was a law-abiding company and complied with the laws of the United States. Surveillance experts told the news outlet this is the first case to surface of a U.S. internet company agreeing to a spy agency's demand by searching all arriving messages as opposed to requests for stored messages or scanning a small number of accounts in real time. Under U.S. laws, including the 2008 amendments to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, intelligence agencies can ask American phone and internet companies to provide customer data to aid foreign intelligence gathering efforts for a variety of reasons, including prevention of terrorist attacks. But it wasn't until the disclosures by the NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden and others, who exposed the extent of electronic surveillance on the public and forced the U.S. government to scale back its program to protect privacy rights. Senator Ron Wyden, the Democrat from Oregon, has led the fight in Congress to address the intelligence community's reliance on secret interpretations of surveillance law, and he expressed dismay about the revelations. Rebecca Miles, WBAI News, New York.
Yahoo is saying the report that it scanned incoming emails to hundreds of millions of accounts for the U.S. government is misleading. Yahoo says it interprets every government request for data narrowly to minimize disclosure. And this is the news on WBAI in New York. Last night, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine came out like a pit bull attacking Donald Trump, who was defended by Indiana Governor Mike Pence. This was at the first and only two-party vice presidential debate at Longwood University in Virginia.
I can't imagine how Governor Pence can defend the insult-driven, selfish, me-first style of Donald Trump.
Kaine, who is Hillary Clinton's usually affable, easygoing number two, went on the attack from the very beginning, repeatedly interrupting and challenging Pence. Pence, who is an equally genial politician, was unflappable, but there was saber-rattling going on in their talk against Russia and the conflict in Syria. Mike Pence.
I just have to tell you that the provocations by Russia need to be met with American strength. And if Russia chooses to be involved and continue, I should say, to be involved in this barbaric attack on civilians in Aleppo, the United States of America should be prepared to use military force to strike military targets of the Assad regime, to prevent them from this humanitarian crisis that is taking place in Aleppo. There's a broad range of other things that we ought to do as well. We ought to deploy a missile defense shield to the Czech Republic and Poland, which Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama pulled back on out of not wanting to offend the Russians.
Governor,
back in 2009. We've just got to have American strength on the world stage. And when Donald Trump becomes president of the United States, the Russians and other countries in the world will know they're dealing with a strong American president.
Tim Kaine.
Hillary and I also agree that the establishment of a humanitarian zone in northern Syria, with the provision of international human aid consistent with UN Security Council resolution that was passed in February 2014, would be a very, very good idea. And Hillary also has the ability to stand up to Russia in a way that this ticket does not. Donald Trump again and again has praised Vladimir Putin, and it's clear that he has business dealings with Russian oligarchs who are very connected to Putin. The Trump campaign management team had to be fired a month or so ago because of those shadowy connections with pro-Putin forces. Governor Pence made the odd claim. He said, inarguably, Vladimir Putin is a better leader than President Obama. Vladimir Putin's run his economy into the ground. He persecutes LGBT folks and journalists. If you don't know the difference between dictatorship and leadership, then you got to go back to a fifth grade civics class. I tell you what offends me. Governor Pence just said that Donald Trump will rebuild the military. No, he won't.
During the debate, VP Green candidate Ajamu Baraka, who was cut out of the two-party debate, held a virtual debate broadcast on social media. Here he is on Democracy Now! Responding to the saber rattling.
This is a very dangerous conversation. What we are seeing from both candidates, both parties, is a commitment to go to war. It's very disheartening to see the kind of images coming from the conflict in Syria. But that conflict had a genesis. It didn't just emerge out of thin air. And not to get into the details of how this conflict evolved, I think it's important, though, to say that, the U.S., their hands are not clean. That this notion that the U.S. was standing on the side and not involved, that narrative is a false narrative. And this idea that the collapse of the last ceasefire can be put at the foot of the Russians is, in fact, an outright lie. Now, that may be painful for folks who are not following the situation very closely, but it is, in fact, a fact that basically the Pentagon undermined the agreement, the ceasefire agreement that was negotiated by John Kerry when they attacked the Syrian army and killed 62 of their soldiers, when they attacked a known site. That was the effect of collapse of that ceasefire. So going into Syria and establishing a humanitarian zone, we're talking about an act of war. Where is the legitimacy for that? The U.S. has no legitimacy to be operating in that territory. And this plan on both the Democrat side and the Republican side to take the U.S. back into a war, because when you talk about intervention, you're talking about boots on the ground, another war, the American people are tired of this. And I don't think they're going to go for the justification for intervention again into this conflict. What we would do with the Stein-Baraka administration is to use the power of this state to engage in a real peace process, to use the power of this state to have real national reconciliation in Syria, to de-escalate the issues, de-escalate the conflict in Syria and across the Middle East. So we're not going to stand by and allow for this kind of war propaganda to be whipped up by both of these candidates and by the corporate media.
Another topic, law and order, community policing, and stop and frisk came into focus in the Democratic and Republican VP debate. Pence said his uncle, who was a cop in downtown Chicago, was a role model, that police are the best of us and that criticism must stop.
Donald Trump and I are going to make sure that law enforcement have the resources and the tools to be able to really restore law and order to the cities and communities of this nation. It's probably why the 330,000 members of the Fraternal Order of Police endorsed Donald Trump as the next president of the United States of America, because they see his commitment to them. They see his commitment to law and order. But they also hear the bad-mouthing, that comes from people that seize upon tragedy in the wake of police action shootings as a reason to use a broad brush to accuse law enforcement of implicit bias or institutional racism. And that really has got to stop. I mean, when an African-American police officer in Charlotte named Brentley Vinson, an all-star football player who went to Liberty University here in the state, came home, followed his dad into law enforcement, joined the force in Charlotte in 2014, was involved in a police action shooting that claimed the life of Keith Lamont Scott. It was a tragedy. I mean, we mourn with those who mourn. We grieve with those who grieve. We're saddened at the loss of life. But Hillary Clinton actually referred to that moment as an example of implicit bias in the police force, where she used, when she was asked in the debate a week ago whether there was implicit bias in law enforcement, her only answer was that there's implicit bias in everyone in the United States.
I just think
what we ought to do is we ought to stop seizing on these moments of tragedy. We ought to assure the public that we'll have a full and complete and transparent investigation whenever there's a loss of life because of police action. But Senator, please, you know, enough of this seeking every opportunity to demean law enforcement broadly by making the accusation of implicit bias every time tragedy occurs.
Tim Kaine said people shouldn't be afraid to bring up bias in law enforcement.
And if you're afraid to have
If
you're afraid to have the discussion, you'll never solve it. And so here's an example, heartbreaking. We would agree this is a heartbreaking example. The guy, Philando Castile, who was killed in St. Paul. He was a worker, a valued worker in a local school. And he was killed for no apparent reason in an incident that will be discussed and will be investigated. But when folks went and explored this situation, what they found is that Philando Castile, who was they called him Mr. Rogers with dreadlocks in the school that he worked, the kids loved him, that he had been stopped by police 40 or 50 times before that fatal incident. And if you look at sentencing in this country, African Americans and Latinos get sentenced for the same crimes at very different rates.
We need criminal justice reform. We should not be able to bring up and talk about bias in the system. We'll never solve the problem. When an African American police officer is involved in a police action shooting involving an African-American, why would Hillary Clinton accuse that African-American police officer of implicit bias?
I guess I can't believe you are defending the position that there is no bias and it's a topic.
Governor Pence, I have a question on that point. I did not make that statement. Your fellow Republican, Governor Pence, Senator Tim Scott, who is African-American, recently spoke on the Senate floor. He said he was stopped 7 times by law enforcement in 1 year.
A U.S.
He
senator.
Said, I have felt the anger, the frustration, the sadness, and the humiliation that comes with feeling like you're being targeted for nothing more than being just yourself. What would you say to Senator Scott about his experiences?
Well, I have the deepest respect for Senator Scott, and he's a close friend. And what I would say is that we need to adopt criminal justice reform nationally. I signed criminal justice reform in the state of Indiana, Senator. And we're very proud of it. I worked when I was in Congress on the Second Chance Act. We have got to do a better job recognizing and correcting the errors in the system that do reflect an institutional bias in criminal justice. But what Donald Trump and I are saying is, let's not have the reflex of assuming the worst of men and women in law enforcement. We truly do believe that law enforcement is not a force for racism or division in our country.
So what would you say to Senator Scott, Governor?
Law enforcement in this country is a force for good. They truly are people that put their lives on the line every single day. But I would suggest to you, what we need to do is assert a stronger leadership at the national level to support law enforcement. You just heard Senator Kaine reject a stop and frisk. Well, I would suggest to you that the families that live in our inner cities that are besieged by crime.
What would you tell Senator Scott if I could jump in?
I've heard Senator Scott make that eloquent plea. And look, criminal justice is about respecting the law and being respected by the law. So there is a fundamental respect issue here. And I just want to talk about the tone that's set from the top. Donald Trump during this campaign has called Mexicans rapists and criminals. He's called women slobs, pigs, dogs, disgusting. I don't like saying that in front of my wife and my mother. He attacked an Indiana-born federal judge and said he was unqualified to hear a federal lawsuit because his parents were Mexican. He went after John McCain, a POW, and said he wasn't a hero because he'd been captured. He said African Americans are living in hell, and he perpetrated this outrageous and bigoted lie that President Obama is not a U.S. citizen. If you want to have a society where people are respected and respect laws, you can't have somebody at the top who demeans every group that he talks about. And I just, again, I cannot believe that Governor Pence will defend the insult-driven campaign that Donald Trump has run.
Mike Pence smiled but didn't respond. Frequently, he avoided taking the bait. Pundits say this is a shrewd move for a conservative darling who could have eyes on the Oval Office himself if Trump loses in November. But for voters seeking assurances from Pence about Trump's temperament, there was little to cling to, and the two discussed a woman's right to choose, Ultra-right-wing conservative Pence reiterated his anti-abortion stance.
People need to understand we can come together as a nation. We can create a culture of life. More and more young people today are embracing life because we know we are we're better for it. We can, like Mother Teresa said at that famous national prayer breakfast.
This is important.
Let's welcome the children into our world. There are so many families around the country who can't have children. We could improve adoption so that families that can't have children can adopt
Governor,
more readily those children.
Why don't you trust women to make this choice for themselves? We can encourage people to support life. Of course we can, but...
Kane is a Catholic who personally opposes abortion, but he has consistently voted in favor of abortion rights.
Why don't you trust women? Why doesn't Donald Trump trust women to make this choice for themselves? That's what we ought to be doing in public life, living our lives of faith or motivation with enthusiasm and excitement, convincing each other, dialoguing with each other about important moral issues of the day.
Because
but on fundamental issues of morality,
because
we should
Senator,
let women make their
because
own
there
decisions.
Because a society can be judged by how it deals with its most vulnerable, the aged, the infirm, the disabled, and the unborn. I believe it with all my heart, and I couldn't be more proud to be standing with a pro-life candidate in Donald Trump.
Green Party candidate Ajamu Baraka in a virtual debate responds.
We cannot have a situation in this country where women are criminalized for exercising their self-determination over their bodies, that women have a fundamental right to autonomy and self-determination over themselves, their sex lives, and everything else. And it's sort of absurd for me to see these two white males engage in this kind of conversation. Well, to a certain extent, I guess we have to agree, though, with Tim Kaine than the right-wing patriarchy of Mike Pence. I believe that he represents a position that is quite troubling, one that we have to reject as a society evolving in a way, in a direction in which we are going to represent and support and recognize the equal rights of everyone in this society. It's also quite surreal to me that both talk about the sanctity of life. Just 20 minutes from talking about militarism and going to war, I guess that's one reason why some of us find ourselves unable to completely understand the morality of some of these individuals who call themselves people of faith. It's a clear contradiction to me. Tim Kaine, who says he believes in life, felt that he was compelled to sign off on those death sentences in Maryland, in Virginia. That's not true. He had the ability to commute those death penalty cases to a life in prison. He made a political choice, and as a consequence, someone's life was taken. So, you know, these kinds of ethical contradictions are the kinds of contradictions that we find reflected also in the contradictory policies of both of these candidates.
Human rights activist and Green Party VP candidate Ajamu Baraka. The next debate between Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton will be on October 9th, this Sunday evening. It's being held at Washington University in St. Louis. Martha Raddatz and Anderson Cooper are moderating. Debate questions are being solicited at presidentialopenquestions.com. And that's the WBAI Evening News for Wednesday, October 5th, 2016. The news was produced with Matthew Wells, Andrea Sears, Rebecca Miles, and Reggie Johnson. Linda Perry, WBAI News, New York.